Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Buddy Frank, who has been a slot director at many casinos for decades.
Hi. Glad to join you today.
Well, good. And before we talk to Buddy, we had a question from a listener. He's an American blackjack player. He's being transferred to London, and he wants to know how the game in Britain and elsewhere in Europe compares to the American game. Richard, I hope you know something about this, because I don't.
Well, I know a little bit. I've said for 35 years, I've said that the casinos in London are a gold mine that nobody has figured out how to get the gold out of the mine yet. They get enormous action, but the problem is they are very, very wary of card counters, especially Americans. So you will not last long counting cards in the London casinos. Even worse, since the Phil Ivey ruling, the casinos have become more emboldened and have started stealing money from the blackjack players. The excuse they use is that the casinos are private clubs. Card counting is against the rule of their private club, and therefore they're just keeping your money. So if you go in and lose, everything is fine. If you win, you may not get paid. So for a card counter, London is not a very good venue. On the other hand, flights are very cheap in Europe, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of casinos spread around Europe in almost every country. And you never know when you might walk into a gold mine in one of those countries. So I wouldn't expect you to make much from the English casinos, but you may find something really worthwhile in one of the other countries that you can visit on your days off.
Richard and I recently placed a high wager bet, well, actually it was his 10 versus my 20, on a bot versus the experts heads up no limit hold'em game taking place in Pittsburgh. The bot was prepared by the people at the Carnegie Mellon University. Last time I checked was Tuesday noon Vegas time. They're about a quarter of the way through their 120,000 hand match, and at that time the bot was ahead by about 50,000 chips. At the end of the last match, where humans played about the same amount that they've played so far, the humans won by 760,000 chips. The organizers agreed they lost, but they noted this was a typical tie, although it didn't seem like that to any of us. Now, since this time the lead is only 6% as large as what used to be a statistical tie, and it's in the other direction, surely this also qualifies as a tie. You can watch the match in real time. I am not a poker player, and I got bored quickly with watching, but perhaps it is more interesting to some of the rest of you. Have you seen any of it, Richard?
I have not. I did find out that a friend of mine is one of the sponsors of the match, which I didn't realize going in, or I would have asked him for whether I should make our bet or not. But I believe he's betting on the bots as well. So, I haven't watched any of it. As you say, I think it'd be kind of like watching paint dry. But
not that interesting. It really isn't. So, all right. So you went ahead and you risked the whole $10 even without consulting your friend. Wow.
Yeah.
What a gambler you are. All right, let's talk to Buddy. Buddy taught gaming at the University of Nevada, Reno, San Diego State University. He's on the editorial board of two separate magazines and a frequent speaker at gaming convention. He used to host a radio program where I was a guest a few times, so now he can't say no when I ask him. It's nice to have that ace in the hole. And he's been a casino executive with slots and our marketing for more than 25 years. Buddy Frank, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thanks. Glad to be with you.
All right. Many of our listeners are competent video poker players. How do slot directors look at strong players differently today than they did several years ago?
Wow. Not everybody looks at the same, but there are some major differences. If you go back several years, everybody used to look at you the same. They would take a look at your coin in, they would take a look at your actual win, and they would take a look at the overall hold percentage. And for a lot of particularly slot directors without a lot of experience, those numbers weren't always good. The coin in was fabulous. I mean, video poker players play more and run more money through machines than most other people. Obviously, by segment, low denom is better than a standard low denom, and a high denom is low because of the nature of the game. And generally, they're pretty loose. The only time the two would get close together in odds, and not that close, but a little close, is high limit players, because as you might imagine, the $100 slots were probably always the loosest slot type machine, a real machine in the casino, and it had a relatively low. In many places I've worked, that's 2-3%, theoretical. And the slots hold a little bit better across the board, the real slots, than the poker game, meaning, as you know, the poker can vary dramatically depending on your skill level. And many non-skilled video poker players, even if you have a 0.5% hold, will hold 2-3%. So it was fairly typical. But when you get to the good players, I think across the board, the video poker players playing on a much looser product than any other game in the casino, with the exception of the table games. So a lot of people just approached it as the video poker player is bad because he has a poor hold percentage. And that's the only thing they had to track, was those items. Now, there was lots of mistakes that marketing folks and slot directors made in the early days, which gave those players even a worse reputation, of which they didn't deserve. And I think you got to read Bob's book about million-dollar players to see some of those mistakes, and there's legendary stories. I know one casino I joined about 12 years ago. When I joined, they were thrilled that they had just recruited a couple of the highest rolling video poker players out of Las Vegas to their California location. And when I looked at the numbers, I saw that indeed they were very big players, very high coin in, very active in everything. They were quite skilled. They were advantage players. And they were holding, the machines they were playing were between 0.5% and 1%, and they were playing pretty close to that. And the casino was just excited until I pointed out that at that time they were giving back 4% cash back. Obviously, these folks were, players were quite happy because they were making a very good living off the poker machines, and in many respects couldn't lose unless they had a horrendous dry spell. So one of the things that's changed over years is I think every slot director in the world went to seminars or meetings or whatever and said, hey, my God, you got to get your complimentaries and your return to the player, whether it's cash back or more modern today, easy play or rewards or whatever, in line with the actual play patterns. And Bob, I think you've helped an awful lot of slot directors through your hat as a consultant realize that they have to have some reasonable levels and not be stupid. In fact, in the early days, if we go back, marketing people didn't even talk to slot people. And so there was a huge disconnect. But I think most folks, with rare exceptions, have learned that and try to set the amount they give back in, I'll use Harrah's terms, total rewards, try to make it somewhat aligned with what the video poker player's doing. But there's some errors there, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. Is that somewhat helpful? And the new
system is. Do they treat different video poker players differently? So,
they should.
I mean, do they drill down and look at what specific machines they're playing and how well they're playing them?
Well, good casinos do. And when I say good, this isn't a bad versus evil. This is a knowledgeable versus non-knowledgeable. And let me mention now some of the things that have changed if you have good data and you have really sharp operators. And that's that, again, I mentioned total rewards, but a lot of casinos now with better data systems are looking at the total contribution by the player. And it's many things. I mean, the most simple example is what is, and this is particularly true in Vegas more than most places, what are you giving back the player in total rewards? Everybody always used to look at cash back, and a lot of players look at easy play or free play, if you will. But many of the better casinos are looking at guy's total value. Did he buy a hotel room, and what's your profit margin are there? Did they eat in the restaurants with cash, or was it all comp? And so on, so they could get a total net worth of the player one way. And the better places actually do that on an individual basis. So they do look at the actual play of the player. And not only with a good video poker player do you look at their coin in or their volume and their hold percentage, but you look at their actual win too, because as Bob will tell you, he's a very good player. But occasionally you lose, don't you, Bob?
Never happens.
Never happens. I know Bob loses because I've seen his stuff. But he wins a lot, too. He wins more than the average player because he's very good at it. So you got to look at the player to see what they actually did. And then if you want to keep that player coming back to your casino, you give him rewards comparable to the worth he provides to the casino. Now, I know you wish the rewards were higher than the actual worth, but a good casino will actually try to balance that out. But now that I've said that, I want to mention some problems that are unique to video poker. Most video poker machines are in a multi-game format. And let's be honest, the 95% of all the video poker machines are IGT. And probably of that group, 95% of them are probably in a multi-game format. So this is where a lot of problems come in. And let me tell you about that. Let's say you have, Bob taught me this 100 years ago, but let's say you have a, hard to find now, but you just have a simple jacks or better in 99.54 payback. That's a simple 6996 video poker that I think most of your listeners are probably familiar with. They're great machines. They're a great way to learn video poker because you can understand the strategies without years and years of study. Well, that machine has about a 0.5% hold of the casino. But on most GameKings, which is the IGT platform that that's game on, people group that game. They may put that game in there with a very loose video keno. And a very loose video keno is about 4%. But there may also be on there a video reel machine like Super 8 Race. And slot directors tend to set those tight. If we were talking the nickel world, they would be 10 to 12%. So let's just simplify it and say you only have the, let's say you had a 1% video poker, which is very good, 99% payback, but you also had an 11% video slot on there, like Super 8 Race or one of those games. So what slot directors do to enter these and meet all their regulations in their database, they go, hey, we got a 1% and we got 11%, that's 12, we'll divide it by 2, therefore that game's 6% hold. And they'll enter it
into
their
slot.
Ooh,
I love that.
Yeah, I knew you would. And they'd enter it in their thing as a 6% hold machine. And obviously most of the video, I would imagine that after play, that machine in reality would probably hold 3 to 4%. Because you'd have good players and bad players, maybe even a little below 3%. But that is a huge, huge advantage to the video poker player because he's getting a return at 6% and he's playing at 1. Well, the way the regulations are written, what you do is after 1 year, you go and look at the actual figures and then make an adjustment. But certainly not as much in Las Vegas, but around the rest of the country, video keno is extremely, extremely popular. So that if we had all of our games with just the one video poker game at 99.54, and we had, say, a 4 to 5% keno, that's still going to be a big advantage. Now, the more modern systems – go ahead.
Well, I was just – I mean, forgive me for – I mean, this sounds like a completely stupid question, but
sure.
It's 2017. and it's the machine is nothing but software. How can the machine not know which game you're playing and just assign it accordingly?
Well, that's exactly what the very best systems do. And all the machines, Richard, know exactly what's played on each game. Here's the flaw. They're all fed into a slot system which doesn't. Now, the better ones, meaning those casinos that have the most up-to-date versions and what I call an Ethernet wired floor, they can actually look at it game by game, and that's the best of the best. But I would make a sizable wager that that's less than 5% of all the casinos in the United States, and mainly the ones built recently. I was at Pechanga,
wow,
California, where we had a lot of assets, and we had the greatest system, and it was a real revelation to actually be able to take a look at that. Now, a good slot director with a weaker system can still go down on the floor and manually look at those. But you can imagine in a large casino, that's just a staggering amount of work to take a look at a multi-game with 20 or 30 games on it and record each one manually, enter it in a spreadsheet, and get your data. If you're blessed.
And is the reason that the other places don't have this is that it's some tremendous expense or something?
It's an expense, but even more so that it's a hassle and a learning experience. Now, those who are not Ethernet wired with the latest technology, it's a major expense. In the case of Pechanga, when we upgraded to high-speed network floor, it was about a $3 million hardware-software investment. That's a fair amount of money just to get a few more detailed statistics. The other reason is regulatory control. I want to talk later about the differences between Nevada and other jurisdictions as far as technology and regulations, but the simple truth is it used to be the leading technology venue in the country. In the last 10 years, they're really slow. I was using a version 14 of the Bally system in California when most Nevada operators were using version 9 or 10. So Nevada's fallen behind because of the regulatory lab and things, and they're making some changes. So not everyone has those stats. And then when they do get the stats, are they using them and looking at them correctly? Because quite frankly, there's a lot of myth around video poker, and a lot of slot directors just don't like the video poker player because they don't think he's worth much. And that's because they're not looking at their data. I think they're excellent. I think they're one of your highest repeat visitor guest segments. I think they show your casino in a very good way. And they add an air of excitement and give a feeling about how good your casino is when you operate. You just have to have realistic on the operator side. But again, because of technology and lack of education, not all slot directors are there.
Can I go back to your example of on this new software, the state of the art there at Pechanga or wherever?
Yes.
You mentioned that Jacks Are Better is 99.54.
Yes.
So a good player like Bob is only playing with that, you know, half a percent disadvantage. But,
sure,
you know, Joe the plumber who's drunk on a Friday night might be playing that same game at minus 3 or 4%, even though it's Jacks Are Better. Does the new software tell you Bob's playing at minus half a percent, but Joe the drunk is playing at minus 3.2?
If the casino is sharp enough and willing enough to do something beyond just looking at the boxes, I've got to admit, for most of my career until the last 4 or 5 years, I just looked at the boxes. What I mean by that is, did the poker machine in location A, how much did it hold, what did it do? And that's an average. It averages all the players together. And if you think about that, that really helps a Bob Dancer and really hurts the guy from Nebraska who's never seen a video poker machine before. And that's how you looked at the boxes. Well, I think the better casinos now are actually looking at the players like you would envision they would have done all along, but they don't. And you try to look at the real worth of each individual player. And these things are not intuitive. I mean, they're very... You have to, you know, there's been a big revolution in our industry about looking at data, and I have mixed emotions about that. Many, many slot directors didn't look at data at all or look at enough data, and the other ones totally ignored data and just went down and did gut reaction. I've been in the business 30 years. I know what's going on. Both of those approaches are flawed. It needs to be a good mix of both. And I can give you a million examples. A famous one from Caesars, they got mad at a slot director who wouldn't move a certain machine to a new location because their data showed that that machine, if you moved it, would probably work much, much better. And they asked him to do it twice. He didn't do it. The third time they came down and says, listen, you've got to move those machines. Our data says they're better. And then he asked them quite simply, well, should I just take a chainsaw to saw off the top 2 feet because the ceiling isn't high enough for those machines? That's a stupid example, but it's very true in that sometimes you got to go on the floor and look. And Bob, you've seen video poker machines that have glare from a particularly obtrusive light above it. And that machine, when you look at your data, will be a weak performer. And the reason you didn't stay there, even though it was a good machine, is because it had glare. So you've got to get down on the floor and talk to the players. But you've also got to look at your data. And the best way to look at data is look at individual players. And that's what the better people are doing.
So getting back to my question, you're saying that the technology does now exist, if you want to look, to see how well the player played the individual game.
Yes, it does. And the better casinos who are better operations are doing that. And that will be good because good technology over a long period of time tends to drift down. Where you may not have a big budget like I do, but I'll bet your PC today or your Mac is a lot better than the one 5 years ago. And it took a while. Now, 5 years ago, the real innovators had a sharp one too, but that technology basically got down to everyone eventually. Now, there's some other little flaws with poker. I told you that one about how they figure them as average machine, and only over a long period of time do they get broken down to the individual. But there's also things of how people – you would think everyone would take a look at total contribution of a player. Let's say Bob goes to play at his favorite place twice a week or three times a week, and the guy from Nebraska only comes once every 5 months. Some casinos, this sounds unbelievable, but it's really true. Some casinos evaluate all the players on what they're called their average daily trip, ADT. And if you looked at those two players, the guy who's visiting once to Las Vegas and things might have a bigger play pattern than Bob Dancer on a single visit because he's been saving up on this trip and it's his big splash in Las Vegas, where Bob has a smaller budget daily, but cumulative is much bigger than the other player. Well, so some people just stick with ADT, others do it cumulative. And you got to have a good data system to tell you over time that makes a difference. And to me, that's the beauty of your video poker player. If you have a decent product on your floor, he'll come back time and time again. And here's a shocking thing. Even if you study all of Bob's books and everything else, over time the casino's going to make money on you if their marketing is in line. So to me, keeping good players happy no matter what level they are is good business on the long run, as long as you set up your data and your rewards appropriately.
Makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, common sense, isn't it?
Yeah.
I want to give you one other example where intuition doesn't always play out. And this is a silly example, but let's say you remember I mentioned ADT, average daily trip. What if both of you guys were $10,000 ADT players? And as you know, they give a lot of rewards, and the hotels often get full, particularly in busy times. If you guys were both $10,000 ADT, meaning I won $10,000 off you every time you came in, would I give you a free hotel room? And I think there's probably every person in the world, and at least 99% of all the marketing and slot guys out there would say, yes, let's put that player in a hotel room. But what if I told you I had a trend looking from boxes, going to people, and actually looking at the data for people. But what if historically I found that when Richard came and I put him in a hotel room, he did 20,000 ADT instead of 10. But I put Bob in a hotel room and his went to 11,000. Both of those showed a better return by putting the person in the hotel. But what if I had a measly little $1,000 ADT player, and when I put him in the hotel, he went up to 5,000? That's below Bob's 11, but it's a net gain of 3. I had to put the little guy in the hotel more often than I do Bob. Now, those kinds of decisions aren't intuitive, But if you look at your data, you can make a lot of money doing the right kinds of things like that. That's the world that you've heard about in a lot of industries called big data. And I think it actually benefits all players in the long run because it allows the casino to more appropriately reward you. Now, if you're a student of advantage play, so you can do... I knew this one guy, I won't mention any names here, who came to Reno once in the old days, and when he was there, he saw an advertisement in the airport for the National Bowling Tournament, and he saw several casinos were offering huge rewards to the bowling people. It happened to be a women's tournament, though. So this advantage player immediately got his wife, signed her up to the bowling league, and got a huge return, far more, that was extremely liberal. I think that guy's name was, if I recall the name, was Bob D. something, and his wife Shirley is the one who signed up for the bowling thing, and again, there was the casinos not taking a look properly at all their returns to all players. There are always going to be loopholes like that, and some of those players like Bob D. take advantage of those things. God bless them. That's the casino's fault for not monitoring the programs well enough.
You sound far too smart to have been working for a casino all these years, buddy.
Shame on you. Some casino operators are the best people I've ever met. And some of the best people get corporate overlords now who don't let them do the best things. So.
Well, I'm pretty sure that the smartest casino employees are smarter than the average player, and the best players are smarter than the average casino employee. Now, we like dumb employees.
Of course you do. And I like them when they work for my competitors.
Yes. It's our listeners generally would prefer dumb employees who, and so somebody like you who knows his butt from a burrito, you're worthy competition, but we would rather you be less worthy.
You know, there's that's one side of it, Bob, but the other side of it, some of those guys just refuse to recognize any value to the video poker player at all. And those guys don't help you at all either. They forgive me, I hate to mention any names, so I'll try not to say Caesars, but their pokers are ridiculous. And to me, why even bother putting them in there? They're just obviously the tightest, darn near the tightest programs you can possibly get. And why would you do that to their players? If you don't like video poker players in general, don't put any in there. But if you do, put a decent product in because, again, over time, those players will help you. And if you go into most Caesars property, you'll see all those shiny new pokers because they bought 8,000 of them a year and a half ago. You'll see those brand new pokers at very tight odds. What you won't see is very many people playing them. Well, that just seems stupid to me. Why tighten them up until they're all full? So smart guys may not allow you to take huge advantages of me, but at least they'll give you a good deal, and they'll provide a poker product that you enjoy, you can have a good time, the less skilled player doesn't get raped, and the rewards are at least appropriate. Not as good as some stupid plays, but at least appropriate.
Yeah, they're doing the same thing to the table games as well. And it's even worse.
I'm not a table games guy, but I spend a lot of time studying them. I've been in the business for a long time. It is just atrocious what they're doing to blackjack in Las Vegas. I just can't believe it.
Well, it's not just blackjack. I mean, Steve Wynn has gone from 3, 4, 5 odds down to double odds. The Venetian now has a 000 roulette. You know, so it's, exactly.
Oh, my God. It's just sad, you know, when I see those things. That used to be a novelty game that they would only do for, you know, $1, $2 blackjack. Now I see the $2,500 tables with those type A tables and just shake my head.
Okay, let's change subjects a little bit.
Sure.
In the good old days, if a slot director wanted to change the pay schedule of a machine, say from 9-6 jacks down to 9-5 jacks, which is approximately percent tighter, he had to open up the box and physically change a chip.
Yep.
How is this done today with and without server gaming?
There's a couple variations. And again, I'll talk to you later about class two or server base, which is a little different, but that's very unique and doesn't apply as much, although some, to video poker. But basically, the majority of the machines out there now are, as you described, still. There is, in the old type of machines, the classic machines we're used to, Game King, you have to open the machine and actually what we call RAM clear it, to change all the stats and clear the meters, and then put in a new chip, put it all back together, and then you have new odds in your game. One of the variations on the latest, you mentioned All-Star 2, on a number of the newer boxes, you can program all the things off, I'll call it like a memory stick. It's like a memory stick you might keep your pictures on or download something from your computer. You can set up one machine and then that move that exact same setup to many other machines. That doesn't sound like a big deal, but video poker, here's another oddity with video poker. Most of them are multi-games. Most of them have multiple variations of odds depending on denom or other characteristics, and you have so many games today in multi-denominations. So it takes nearly 10 times longer to set up a video poker machine to change the odds than it does any other machines because there's so many setup options to change. And there's also, and Bob, I know you've ran into this from time to time over your career, sometimes they make mistakes which are just horrible for the casino, can allow, like, you know, you wanted to set it up as a dime and you set it up a dollar, which doesn't sound like much of a problem until the fact that every time you put a dollar in, you get $10 worth of credits. So there can be mistakes in the setups. So this newer machine where you set up one correctly and then move it to all the other machines saves a great deal of time. But the bottom line, your answer is yes, you've got to open up the machines and change things. Now, if you want a little tip for your players, the current mix, until you get more advanced systems, and mix means a minimum internal control systems, mean that if you completely change the odds or significantly change the odds, you must give the machine a new number. And that was always a tip-off to me when I'd go into competitors say, ah, they changed this machine because that used to be machine 1200 and now it's machine 1754. That means they changed the odds. Only recently do some of the newer systems allow you to make that change without changing the number because the number is actually changed on the back end in the slot system, not out on the floor. But you do have to go in and physically change it. And you've seen it. Your bank of favorite machines is there, and all of a sudden one day they're shut down. They're shut down most of that day, and they're on the next day. So it's the same old way. It takes a lot of work. Everyone for the years has accused me of having a switch up in my office or a dial that I can tighten and loosen the machines. I wish that was true years ago. It wouldn't be good for business, wouldn't be good for players, but it's not true. You have to do a lot of work to change them and file a lot of paperwork.
Server gaming. With the server gaming, don't you have that dial in your office?
Sort of. It's not in my office. It's usually locked up by the regulator somewhere, but it's similar. And would you mind if I took a minute to describe what server or class 2 gaming is?
I hope you would.
Okay. Well, let's talk about a standalone machine, your standard Game King video poker. It's its own little computer down there, and its own little computer relative to the game math, what you're playing for and the odds, it's all independent. Meaning the chip you put in there, if I put in a 99-5-4 jacks or better, I have to set that up at that machine and nothing can change it. The only way you can change it is go down and put another chip in it. Now, it is not in any way connected to the slot system where you put your card in. And this is one of the great myths. That system cannot change the odds or do anything to the game. So when you put your card in to say Bob Dancer, I'll track data related to you, but it won't affect the machine. And if I put mine in as Buddy Frank, it'll go to my individual data but not affect the payout of the machine. Server base actually connects all the machines. The machines are dumb terminals. By that I mean they're hooked up to a central computer where those odds and games are housed. And they're usually in the back of the house in designated rooms. We call them comm rooms or TC rooms, a variety of names. and there the server sits under lock and key, and there you can, at the terminal in my office, with approval by Gaming Commission, and they check this, I could change the odds of all the machines hooked to that by pushing a button, so to speak. It's essentially, I've got to do passwords, I've got to get approval by the audit department, I've got an overseer from the finance department. Once everybody agrees, then we can make the change that changes all those machines to whatever we want. But for most people, you're not going to see that. And again, it's a big paperwork hassle, but it can exist. I kind of like the promise of server-based, based on the convenience and the lack of employee manpower. But in a way, I also hated it because I never wanted everyone in the world to have that ability to change that quickly without alerting the player at all. I could imagine abuses occurring. Many corporate gaming companies live or die by their quarterly profits and their win-loss statements, and I just worried about some individual property thing trying to make his budgetary goals by tightening up everything the last 3 weeks of the month or something. If just one guy did that and they caught him, it would be a disastrous image for our entire industry. So I don't think you'll see that. It's existed for 30 years in the Indian gaming world in Class 2, and I'll explain that a bit later. But there hasn't been abuses because, again, you can change them, but it takes a lot of work, a lot of filings, a lot of regulatory requirements to do that. And bottom line is casinos who've overly tightened their machines for reasons other than to get around taxes have not succeeded well in the long run.
Well, are you saying that there are all those regulatory issues even for Indian casinos?
You know, you and I and Bob and I talked a little bit beforehand about what we're going to discuss, and one of the questions he sent me is about a new book out called The Law for Gamblers, which, by the way, I recommend all your players get. It's a wonderful book. I really, really like it. And I would say that I agree with 75% of all the things he said in there. But there was
this
one.
Is Bob Nersessian's book he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. An excellent book, and you should go get it because there's some good stuff in there for average players. But he said Indian casinos have a license to steal. It's just that simple. He is so far off, it's ridiculous. But he does have some history on his side, and if you believe what he says now about Indian casinos, then you believe that myth about the chainsaw in the office that you saw in the movie Casino and smashing card players' hands with sledgehammers. Indian casinos today are more regulated than Nevada casinos. I know some people will say, that's not true. And I know some people can cite small Indian casinos or Indian casinos of 20 years who may have been in that condition. But today it's incredible. I'll give you one example. Here in the Reno or Northern Nevada area, we have a number of casinos, certainly 20 or 30 or so. And the staff at Gaming Control Board, which are good guys, really my friends, they have 10 to 20 agents who actually go out and monitor casinos. At Pechanga, a single casino, I had over 150 people in the gaming regulation department for the one casino. And they were in my face all day long. You remember we talked about changing that chip in a casino? Let me describe how it worked in Northern Nevada. I wanted to make a change to the odds, hopefully loosening them. So I had an 8-5. Jacks are better and want to change it to a 9-6. Bob would like that very much. What I would do in Reno is call up IGT or drive over to the plant because it's here in Reno, pick up those chips, bring them back, have my crew install them in the machine. Now, how would anyone make sure they're correct, including the regulatory officials? Once a year, or sometimes once every 2 years, gaming control agents would come out and test 10% of the machines to make sure they were accurate. Let me describe that same procedure at a casino like Pechanga, or Foxwoods, or Mohican, or any of the large casino, Talking Stick in Arizona, or Cache Creek and Thunder Valley in Sacramento area. Here's how that works. First of all, I can order the chips, but I cannot touch them, I cannot pick them up, I cannot send my mechanic. They have to be sent under seal to the gaming control agents, which are totally separate. those gaming control agents then test the chip at that time before they install it and certify that it's accurate and thing. Then they accompany me down with my mechanics, and by the way, we have to have 48 hours before we can ship them notification. Once it arrives, we get it, they test it. Then they go down with my mechanics, and they oversee as we put the chip in and do it. And then they seal it up. It's in a locked compartment called the CPU lock, and they seal it up. Every single machine in an Indian casino is sealed that way, and that's how we change a chip. It takes about a week to do that. In Nevada, it takes about half an hour. So
I agree there's a lot of regulation in California and Connecticut. But what about Oklahoma or Michigan?
Well, let's talk about Oklahoma. You certainly, I think, know where the largest slot machine casino in the world is these days, don't you, Richard?
Well, the largest casino, yeah, Windstar in Oklahoma.
Exactly. It's in Oklahoma. And so some of the larger casinos in the world are in Oklahoma right now. But you're absolutely right, some of the smaller ones are. And there have been a few horror stories. In fact, one flaw in that argument I just told you, well, who do those regulators work for? Well, they work for the tribe, and the tribe also runs the casino. While you may think that, oh, my gosh, that's a huge conflict of interest, and I think on the surface it appears to be, those tribal members are very sensitive about losing that public trust. And trust me, I fought many times when I would have someone cheating me or whatever, and the Gaming Commission would overturn me because of fairness or image. But if you have very, very small operations, you can get some abuse. You can read the news stories just like I do of gaming commissioners being arrested or tribal leaders going to jail for bribery or whatever. That happens. But I would say if you compare Nevada's early history before they learned, you'll see those same kinds of abuses taking part. And in fact, most of the better casino operations run by Native Americans, they have the best of the best. They bring in industry experts from all over. And so they've taken the best of Nevada, both on the regulatory side and the other side, and tried to implement it. More so than the current MGMs and Caesars of the world, most of them have a community interest, meaning the owners of the casino probably live in the community where the casino is. So they want to have good relationships with that community. And it gives you a very, very strong... If you talk to any of my colleagues who work for Indian casinos versus the Nevada environment, even the New Jersey environment, which is a little bit more restrictive, they'll still say the regulations are so easy in non-Indian compared to the larger Indian casino operations. So that's why I disagree with him a little bit. There is that perception of how can the fox watch the chicken house, but they do a pretty good job.
I'd like to shift gears here for a second, because there's a question I don't want to miss.
Sure.
So there's been a lot of discussion among people I know about these roulette and craps machines, and I'm talking about the ones that have a physical roulette wheel under a dome, or the big dice bouncing around under a dome. And some people have told me that these are slot machines and that the hold can be set to whatever they want to set the hold, that it's not based on the actual odds of a pair of dice. And I'm wondering, and then other people say, no, that wouldn't be legal in Nevada. So I'm wondering which is true in Nevada.
I thought you were going to ask about the silly rules in California, but your other question is very good. In fact, many jurisdictions have different rulings. In California, for a long time, they ruled that the roulette machines were not legal at all because they were roulette, and roulette's forbidden by the Constitution. We fought a hard battle there, including with the current governor when he was attorney general, and we finally won that the roulette machines were slot machines and that the way the ball is ejected is random numerator, just like anything else. So the only way you can change the odds on things like roulette, a roulette machine, is if you mess with a pay table or the return or do something absolutely stupid like you described a minute ago of having triple aughts. Now, you can vary with your setup because it's video, I could change it from double aught to single aught. That's one change I could make. Or I could
These are not video. These are physical machines under a glass, under a dome.
Well, they're under a dome, but aren't the individual betting terminals video?
Yes, but there is two zeros on the physical wheel.
Yes, you'd have to change that. Okay, but what you could do is you could make, if you chose to, you could make the odds different on the video pay. But it would be just like video poker. The public would see it in a minute and know. Like if I paid 34 to 1 instead of 35 to 1, everyone would know it in a minute because it would have to be posted on the machine. So from my point of view, those, the sicbo, the craps, or the roulette on a machine, as long as someone hasn't done something silly with a pay table, which would be very obvious to you, are just the same as a standard live dealer, except the dealer now doesn't ask for early outs or, and get mad about tips and file sexual harassment complaints.
Now, I was told that those dice machines in New York, where the laws are different, that the dice are actually controlled by magnets and the numbers are predetermined and they can set the machine to hold much higher than the true odds of a craps game.
I can't say for certain. I did work at a little operation in New York called Turning Stone, and we had some machines like that, and they were not like that. I don't know of any like that. I would hate for our industry to have machines like that that did that, because that wouldn't be fair. I know the machines provided by the major manufacturers that are in California and Nevada right now do not operate like that.
Okay, and that would not be legal in Nevada to do that, right?
Well, not only in Nevada. If here's the interesting thing. In Nevada is all controlled by the Gaming Control Board, and they wrote a series of standards called Minimum Internal Control Standards, MICS. Well, when Congress, back in the mid-80s, passed the law called IGRA, they did the same thing, had Minimum Internal Control Standards. And so they drafted their own. They said, we want to have our own. Guess what? They're darn near identical to Nevada standards, almost word for word on all of them. In fact, when Nevada makes a change, generally the NIGA, which is National Indian Gaming Association, they change their mix, and they're almost identical. So it's and NIGA, N-I-G-A, controls most of the Indian casinos in the United States. So I'm telling you that the rules in Nevada and most of the Indian land are pretty similar. Now, there's some huge exceptions in California that I think your listeners would be interested in, especially you, Richard. And that's that the way the compacts are written is Indian casinos can have any games that are legal in the state of California under the gaming compact. So that included slot machines of all forms. So all the slots in California are nearly identical to the ones in Nevada, with the exception of Class 2, and I'll explain that later. But California, the Constitution specifically excludes roulette and games with dice like craps. Now, given that, the people in California knew that players wanted those games, so they had to come up with alternatives which were legal, but they're different. I hate them, but odds-wise, if you're a gambler, they're identical. One is they use a small roulette wheel with cards in the slots. They spin it around, and wherever it stops, they pull out the thing, and it may say a roulette number. Now, the cards are numbered exactly like the numbers on a roulette wheel, and you can have double odd or single odd, whatever you say, and whatever card turns up. That one actually feels sort of okay because it kind of combines an old Big Six wheel with a roulette game, and the players play that almost as much as they do with a standard roulette table. The one that I hate is the craps games. So how do you run a craps game if you can't have dice? Well, what they do is they use cards. They have cards numbered 1 through 6, and they have two sets of them, and they go in a shuffle machine, and then they turn it up. And so, yo, 11, you throw, and you turn over the two cards, and you got a 4 and a 6. It's boring as heck, but guess what? The odds are identical. It's to me, ridiculous that they have silly laws like that that allow it. Every time they're trying to get the law changed, somebody jumps in with a rider that gets it defeated. I think the people of California would approve craps and roulette in a minute, but right now it's illegal.
I have to say I'm a big fan of those card craps and card roulette games. So
I just think they're boring on the crap table. They're exactly the same odds, though. So if a player is worried about, gee, is it going to come out? It's exactly the same odds. In fact, there's been a couple of famous things where some really good skilled advantage players were able to take advantage of the flaws in shuffling and make some pretty good money. But other than that, they're exactly the same.
Yeah, I've heard about some of those.
Yeah, I've heard about some of those. One of them actually is a host on this show, and but I don't remember which one.
I thought you might have heard of those.
All right, we're going to stop for some commercials now.
Okay.
And we're going to get back to Buddy, so don't go away. We're talking to Buddy Frank, former slot director, and very knowledgeable. Okay. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. In January, from Sundays through Wednesdays, 3 a.m. to 3 a.m., the $500,000 spin to win promotion is in effect. 500 points earns you a spin on a slot machine. 2,000 points earns you a spin on a video poker machine. A limit of 4 spins a day. Spins are either free play, $10 to $100. Oops, that's not right. Spins are either, free play, $10 to $100, or points, 2,500 points through 100,000 points. Which means $7.50 through $300 in value. Prizes are downloaded directly to your machine. You must play off all of the free play within 2 weeks or it evaporates. So far, the promotion has run almost 3 weeks. The average spin is a little over 0.6%. So if you play the 8,000 points coin in on video poker on each of the 4 days, you're going to get approximately $50 in value over time. So the gains are, there's a number of gains which are essentially even, like NSU deuces, which is 99.7, and you have a 0.3 slot club. So it's essentially an even game. And so you go in and you play your 8,000 points. On average, you're going to get a bonus of $50. It's a good deal for low rollers. The next 10-week semester of free video poker classes will begin next week, Wednesday, January 25th at noon in the Silverado Lounge. This is the closest lounge to the parking garage. First class will be Jacks or Better. It is the easiest class, and it's a good foundation for several of the games that follow. The complete schedule of classes may be found on bobdancer.com. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is called Magic Deal Poker. This is a 10 coins per line game where periodically you get 1, 2, or 3 magic cards, which are filled in by the machine to give you the best possible hand given the previous cards. This sounds sort of like Dream Card, but there are some important differences. One major difference is Magic Card does not come with the same annoying sound that Dream Card does. More importantly, perhaps, the Magic Cards are filled in after the draw, whereas Dream Cards are filled in before the draw. You can't change the Magic Cards. In Dream Card, you can overrule the machine, and sometimes you should. There are up to 3 Magic Cards. In Dream Card, there's only 1. It costs more to play Magic Card, namely 5 extra coins per line rather than the 1 extra coin it costs to play Dream Card. There are some strategic considerations with Magic Card, whereas there are none in Dream Card. For example, playing the game on videopoker.com this week to get a feeling for it before I talked about it on the air, I was playing 9-6 double-double bonus Magic Card. And I was dealt a suited 3 and a 6 and 3 magic cards. I could have held the 3 and a 6. That would have been guaranteed straight flush, which guarantees me 250 coins per hand. That's a nice profit. Here, I just held the 3 and received at least 4 threes for 400 each time.
few times four threes and a kicker. That's worth 800. And should it happen that the only other card dealt would have been an ace, then the machine would have given me four aces with a kicker for 2,000. Those are much better results than the guaranteed 250. So there's things to think about. They're not real tough problems, but there's some hands that came up that I just didn't know how to play, and I thought it would be an interesting thought process. The frequency of the magic cards is determined by the game. In Jacks or Better, where four of a kind pay a lousy 125 coins, you get magic cards 13.65% of the time. It doubles the bonus, where four of a kind and pay up to 2,000 coins, you get magic cards 9.5% of the time, which figures. I've not seen the percent of on magic cards for triple-double bonus, where four of a kind could pay 4,000 coins, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be less. All right, let's get back to Buddy Frank.
Hey, can I comment on two of your ads?
You may, by all means.
One is the last one, talking about why, if you're going to play video poker, why wouldn't you become knowledgeable? Because you can make so much more money, and it's not that hard. You mentioned several resources. VideoPoker.com, you can practice. You can buy a software program. You want to mention the name of that, Bob? Because I love it.
Well, I sell Video Poker for Winners. It's a
good
one.
That's the one. That
there
is a great program.
Well.
That is a great program. I highly recommend it to everyone. I used it a lot to just double-check my poker schemes to see when they went positive, when they didn't, what would happen if I changed some of the odds. So it's a great program. Plus, I became a lot better player. So if you're going to play video poker, why wouldn't you play better? And one thing I loved about some of your hard copy books was you could skip that last third of the book for the expert techniques because some people have a life, but you can make a lot of money just reading that introductory section about how to be a better average player. It'll make a huge difference in your return. The other one, you talked about the Richard Gans Casino. Michael Gans Casino. That is such an interesting story because I told you about if you please your players and offer a good product, you can make a ton of money. I'm leaving off a lot of details, but he first opened that at South Coast, did tremendous. He sold it to a large corporation, which did not do very well with the property because they had corporation kinds of policies, purchased it back through interesting trades, offered huge value like you talked about on your commercial, and he's probably one of the more admired properties on the strip for the profit return. So just because you're offering loose pokers and have great rewards does not mean they can't be extremely profitable. I wish some corporations in Las Vegas would learn that lesson.
So do we.
Sorry, I get carried away.
Amen. Amen.
We are honored to have Michael Gaughan as a sponsor of this radio show and of the free video poker classes.
Yeah, he does a great job.
An excellent
the only
resource.
Tight product I think he ever offered was when he had all the airport slots. But other than that, the guy is my hero.
And probably if you were in charge of the airport slots,
I'd do the same
where
thing.
Almost all of your population is transient, going to or from a plane, you'd make them tighter too.
I would do the same thing. You're absolutely right.
All right. So we've actually been on the air for about an hour so far. And we haven't covered nearly all of our questions. So it comes back of, can we get you back in the relatively near future, buddy? This has been educational for me. And I assume if I'm learning about video poker from you, all of our other listeners are too.
Well, I owe you because you taught me an awful lot about video poker as well from the player perspective. So I think sharing ideas between operators and players is the most value you can do. So I'd be delighted to come back anytime.
Good. That's the right answer. So, and we're going to save the discussion for Class 2 versus Class 3 until next time.
Your Nevada players don't need to worry about that.
Well, but Nevada players do get on planes
travel.
And go elsewhere some of the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, if any of our – now, our show itself is probably 95% players, but it is posted on CDC Gaming Reports, which is 99% casino management.
So should anybody wish to get a hold of you, buddy, what are you doing, and are you fielding emails, and how do they do that?
Sure. I'm essentially retired from the daily 7 days a week, or at least 6.5 days a week I used to work, but I essentially have a small consulting business with a few clients out there. It's called Buddy Frank Slot Strategies. If anyone wants to get a hold of me, you're welcome to use my email or direct it to Bob and Richard, who know how to get a hold of me. But my email is buddy, common spelling, B-U-D-D-Y, buddy.frank, F-R-A-N-K, at yahoo.com. And since the Russians hacked it, everybody knows my account information anyway, so buddy.frank at yahoo.com.
We all have your password. Thanks,
yeah,
for
Russia. Can you remind us of the password for the few of us who aren't Russian?
You'll have to pay for that from them.
So. All right. This has been extremely educational for me and Richard, too. And we thank you, and we'll be in touch with you soon. My guess is you'll be on again in less than a month.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks, guys. I always enjoy it.
All right.
Thank you, buddy.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.